NBC host Megyn Kelly insisted that she challenged his views during Sunday night's interview, but did this interview with Alex Jones, a conspiracy theorist and founder of the InfoWars website, did it give him a platform to share his conspiracies on everything from 9/11 to the Sandy Hook shooting? Why would a journalist, Megyn Kelly in this instance, seek out an interview with someone who may push paranoia to the mainstream? We're unpacking this and many more questions with Jane Kirtley. She is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota, and she directs the Silla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. Jane, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, NBC is taking heat over its decision to air this interview that host Megyn Kelly conducted with right-wing radio host and conspiracy theorist Alex Jones that aired last night. And let's first take a listen from that interview.
When you say parents faked their children's death, people get very angry.
Yeah, well, that's all I know. But they don't get angry about the 500,000 dead Iraqis from the sanctions, or they don't get angry about all the illegals pouring in. No, it's not a dodge. The media never covers all the evil wars it's promoted, all the big things.
That doesn't excuse what you did and said about Newtown.
Here's the difference. I looked at all the angles of Newtown, and I made my statements long before the media even picked up on it.
Well, critics are saying the network gave Jones a bigger platform to spread misinformation. Kelly defended it, saying it's the media's job to shine a light on newsmakers, good or bad. Who's right here, Jane?
I'm not sure there's a right or wrong. I thought that Megyn Kelly didn't do a bad job last night. I think that a lot of us were very concerned that it really would be just an open platform for Alex Jones to say whatever he chose. I thought she did a pretty good job interrogating him, but I think what's more significant is I think he put himself on display as the, I hesitate to use adjectives. I don't know if he's deluded. I don't know if he's just evil. I don't know if he's purely an entertainer. He certainly doesn't care anything about journalism. That was abundantly clear to me last night. And I think it is useful to have demagogues like Alex Jones debunked. And there are a lot of people out there, I think, who don't really understand who he is. They don't understand the influence he has. As you know, he has a pretty clear conduit to the White House now. President Trump is a big fan of his, or at least purports to be. So this is not somebody we can just push to aside and say, well, this is just a crazy person. This is someone who is influencing an awful lot of people, and I think it's important to reveal him for what he is.
Well, in the media, the term that comes up over and over when deciding what to air is news value. Is there news value in interviewing someone like Alex Jones, whose views would be described as fringe, controversial? The list goes on.
Well, I think it has to be done carefully, because you have to be very careful that you are not endorsing the viewpoints that the person is sharing. And I think Megyn Kelly did a pretty good job of challenging him and using terms that point out that there was really no foundation for what he was saying, and essentially getting him to concede that, because as that excerpt you aired showed, I mean, he kept kind of shifting the narrative. He didn't answer the questions she was asking him, and throughout the balance of the interview, he basically took the position that he was just exploring every conceivable angle, and, you know, exploring angles, looking at all sides, that's certainly legitimate, but, you know, he was manufacturing stuff and playing into the worst conspiracy theories that have no basis in fact. And I think it was revealed yesterday that that's what he's doing, if anybody had any doubt about that.
Some of the things I've read this morning was that Megyn Kelly had really hard-pressing questions, and yet her follow-ups either didn't happen or were soft. Was that perhaps a time issue? She was trying to get through a lot of territory?
Well, I gather, and I mean, I'm basing this, of course, on what Alex Jones has said, and I always take that with a grain of salt, but, you know, he claims he made an audio recording of the entire interview, and there apparently was more to the interview interview than we saw last night. So, you know, with all, you know, giving her the benefit of the doubt, I doubt that it was a time element that was causing the problem. I mean, it wasn't like she was in, you know, a fixed 5 minutes that she had to get this all done. My observation of her so far has been that she does often ask a good initial question and then is not as persistent on pressing for a follow-up. I mean, she did do it in some instances, but I think, again, his very artful way of sort of deflecting was something that it's difficult to counter that. I'm not sure she did as good a job as I would have hoped.
We're talking right now with Jane Kirtley. She's a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota, talking with her about interviewing controversial figures and where the media draws lines. And should the media be interviewing people like Alex Jones? You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jane, for broadcast media, there's often this push to give airtime to a variety of people in an attempt to hear all sides of a story, all perspectives. Should that be a hard and fast rule, or does the hear all sides argument not really hold up in today's climate?
Well, you know, the irony is that back in the olden days when the Fairness Doctrine was still governing broadcast media, media actually had an obligation to provide opposing viewpoints an opportunity to be heard. I mean, you didn't have to reach out to every lunatic fringe person, but you did have to make an attempt to allow opposing viewpoints to have an airing. Of course, now we're not subject to the Fairness Doctrine. I think, quite honestly, that legacy does linger on. You know, I've certainly heard people say that the notion of objectivity in the media is really a trap because it does give credence and credibility to people that don't have any right to have that. On the other hand, I'm also a believer that exposing, you know, the extremes, especially the influential extremes, to public scrutiny is a useful exercise. In talking about this case, I've mentioned, for example, when Edward R. Murrow did his show where he gave Senator Joseph McCarthy basically 15 minutes to say his piece. If we were to look at that today, we'd say you just gave a platform to this, you know, crazy conspiracy communist person. But it turned out to be a very useful thing in terms of educating the public, and frankly, you know, gave McCarthy a chance to hang himself. So it can be done, but it requires a lot of control on the part of the journalist in the sense of keeping on top of it and not letting the person that's being interviewed get away with false statements. And, of course, what happened in the Murrow interviews was that in a second broadcast, Murrow basically deconstructed everything that McCarthy had said, and it was very powerful and very devastating.
And we, of course, have heard fact-checking on the fly has become very much a part of the world we live in today.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Internet, there are positive and negatives to access to information instantaneously because it's not all credible. But it is harder these days to perpetuate a falsehood if there's a way to pin it down. And so that you know, somebody like Tim Russert was expert at that sort of thing. I think Megyn Kelly probably could use a little more work on it at this point.
Dwayne on Facebook says Alex Jones is not a news reporter. He is making up news. But Leah on Facebook says Alex Jones is fascinating. People can grow up and learn to discern and think critically for themselves. Leah goes into this point. At one point in time, Fox News ran with the slogan, "We report, you decide." And it seems like there's a little bit of that here with Alex Jones's interview. What do you make of that philosophy that the media is here to possibly introduce you to something or someone, and it's the responsibility of you, the reader or the viewer, to decide the validity for yourself?
I think ideally that's exactly the role that the news media play. I mean, I think it is important for the press to provide context. Many kinds of facts taken out of context can present a misleading picture. So it's not, to my mind, just enough to provide the facts. You need to provide the context. But, you know, on the other hand, I think, you know, there's the Scripps Howard news chain uses a quote from the Bible about give light and the people will find their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's right in the sense that it's the role of the press to provide the information. It's up to the public to synthesize it. The problem is that now that there are so many conduits for so many people who, you know, frankly, are not adhering to journalistic standards to spread misinformation either accidentally or deliberately, you have to have a certain degree of media literacy, and I'm not sure we're there yet as a society.
We're talking right now with media ethicist Jane Kirtley. She's a professor of media ethics and law at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Scylla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. Alex Jones began as a little-known fringe provocateur, condemned even by right-wing media, but his relationship with President Trump and the traction he gained during the 2016 election brought him into mainstream political discourse. We're talking about his interview and others with controversial figures. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back after these news headlines. There's a continual challenge in journalism to know when the line is crossed. When do you give fringe figures like Alex Jones and his ideas a platform, the attention they seek? The line is blurry. News organizations, they grapple with this. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Joy Cardine Show. Alex Jones was a powerful underground voice for the alt-right media, but was catapulted into the mainstream in December of 2015 when then-presidential candidate Donald Trump was a guest on his radio program. Now, NBC's Megyn Kelly interviewed Jones last night, and her interview just aired last night. Do you support NBC's decision to air Megyn Kelly's interview with Jones? What's your prescription for the media going forward? 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jane Kirtley stays with us. She's a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. And Jane, let's go right to the phones now with Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make the point that this is not journalism at all. I think Alex Jones or whomever believes that 9/11 was an inside job does not deserve a public forum. And Megyn Kelly is a third-rate journalist, if you want to call her that, who seeks controversy to propel her career. We saw that during the elections, the controversy around and the drama around her interactions with Trump, and so this is just another ploy on her part to venture into controversial territory, and she's benefiting from this. But this is, let's not mistake any of this with journalism.
Jane?
Well, I certainly think that Megyn Kelly is not showing the degree of professionalism that I would like to see. I don't know whether she's going to evolve. I don't know if it's inexperience. I would say in her defense that I'm not really sure that the controversy that arose with President Trump during the run-up to the election was entirely her fault. I mean, he plays the role of provocateur and chose to make the outrageous observations that he did, and that could have happened, I think, to anybody, certainly to any woman who was interviewing him. But in terms of things like the interview with Vladimir Putin and now this one, I think there's always a risk for any journalist, however experienced, that they will get played by somebody. And frankly, both Putin and Alex Jones are master manipulators. It takes experience, it takes keeping a cool head, and it takes a lot of good research, both before and after, to put those comments into context, as I was talking about earlier, and I'm not sure that she succeeded in that. But again, going back to the fundamental question, is there value in exposing people like Putin and people like Alex Jones? I think there absolutely is, but it needs to be done in a way that does not just simply give them an unfiltered platform. they already have those, and we certainly don't need to be complicit in continuing that.
Well, Jane, you bring up Vladimir Putin. One other media personality who's been getting a lot of heat recently is filmmaker Oliver Stone for his new 4-part documentary about the Russian leader. And the documentary features is a series of interviews that Stone conducted with Vladimir Putin over the course of 2 years. Megyn Kelly also interviewed Putin for the debut episode for her new NBC show. First, is it appropriate for members of the American media to be going after these interviews in the first place?
Oh, I do think there is value in it, and I don't want to suggest otherwise, because we do have a long tradition in this country of interviewing heads of state and others, no matter how controversial they may be. Again, it requires being able to maintain control as much as one can and putting things into the proper context. But I don't have a problem with that per se. Again, I think the issue is that you have to be very careful that you're not being manipulated and basically being used as a propaganda arm of these individuals.
And one thing is for certain interviews with Alex Jones or with Putin or whomever the controversial figure might be are bound to get ratings. How much does that factor into the decision-making process here for a news network like NBC? Do we even know what's going on, you know, behind those closed doors in talks about ratings?
I would be disingenuous if I said that that was not a factor. Of course it is. I mean, every news decision that is made by the commercial networks is at least in part determined by the best estimate about how that's going to affect their ratings. So, of course, that's going to be a factor. And, you know, the phrase that's often used is getting a controversial figure or someone who is notoriously reclusive or something like that. It's a competitive environment, and certainly that can affect news choices and news judgment.
Well, let's take another call now at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Morning. Off what I was going to say originally, I think I keep hearing about news and journalism. Journalism is real journalists are few and far between. Let's face it, the majority of what we call news today is just basically entertainment, and it's just another means of making a profit. And the more controversial it could be, the more people are going to watch it, the higher the profits are going to be. But what I originally wanted to say is the fact that the problem that real news, what some people call mainstream media, well, I call it the real news, is the fact that there's a good percentage, maybe 30-40%, maybe even more people of our people today do not believe in facts. Facts have no basis on what they believe or what they subscribe to. In fact, if it seems like it's a real fact, they won't want to believe it. And it's amazing how people will believe the most bizarre things that are put in front of them by some off-stream media. One thing that comes to mind is when people believe that actually Hillary Clinton was running some kind of a child sex ring out of a popular Washington restaurant or pizza restaurant. People would believe that, but when there were true facts posted in mainstream, real media, New York Times or whatever, the Post, they would not believe those facts. They thought they were all just fiction or fake news or whatever. And that's one of the problems that people, the news media faces today, is that people just do not want to believe facts.
Jane?
I absolutely agree with the caller's observations. I think, you know, this so-called fake news phenomenon, it's come to a head, but it's really not new. I believe that this is something that's been going on for a very long time, when forces at either end of the political extreme have done their best to make the mainstream media or real news media something that is to be doubted, something that is to be questioned. And a lot of people don't feel like they have a reliable source, at least in the conventional media, that they can turn to. And I think there are a lot of reasons for this, but I think it's a crisis. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, because if we don't have some kind of core idea of sort of what truth is or how we determine what truth and what facts are, then I don't see how we go forward as a society. We can't have reasonable discussion and debate if we can't agree to a basic set of facts. So, I mean, I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but I really am concerned going forward about how we move, you know, the conversation forward in any kind of sensible way. Because, as your caller suggested, with the proliferation of outlets, people can really choose to tunnel into only those that reinforce the beliefs they already have. You know, they call it confirmation bias. You will read those things that confirm what you already believe, and will ignore the things that don't. And how we force people out of that into confronting, the other point of view is very difficult today, with the decline of many newspapers around the country. And the consolidation of the electronic media, it's getting harder and harder to make it possible for people to tap in to that kind of diversity of thought unless they choose to do so. And increasingly, they're choosing not to.
We're talking right now with Jane Kirtley. She is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Scylla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. We are talking about interviews recently with Megyn Kelly interviewing Alex Jones last night. That aired last night on NBC. And also recent interviews with Vladimir Putin. Is the media pushing back enough when interviewing these figures, Alex Jones, Vladimir Putin, or other controversial figures? What do you see as the prescription for the media going forward? Should people like these have a platform? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jane, Oliver Stone appeared on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert last week to promote the documentary series, and he was challenged by Colbert. And I'd like to play an exchange they had and get your reaction to it. Let's take a listen.
What do you say to the people who say that this is a fawning interview of a brutal dictator?
You know, you have to be polite because it was a two-year deal, and it was four times, and I was with him numerous times, 2 hours here, an hour here. It was, catching up with him. He has a busy schedule. He works 12-hour days for almost 16 years now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's politeness, and it's curiosity, and it's the way you ask the questions. I think he respected me, and he respected my work, and he knew I would give him a fair hearing.
Well, let's look into this word polite, Jane. Does the media have an obligation to be polite in cases like this?
Well, let me start by saying that I do not consider Oliver Stone to be a journalist or a producer of documentaries. I mean, in his way, he is as much of a fabricator as Alex Jones. So I do not take him very seriously in that sense. Whatever he was doing, it was not journalism. It was like Sean Penn going to Mexico and meeting with El Chapo. These are people that are engaged in filmmaking, entertainment. They are not journalists. But to answer your question, yes, of course, journalists have to maintain a certain level of professionalism in interviewing people. It's self-defeating if they don't. But being obsequious, being deferential, and allowing them to get away with lies and fabrications is also not professional. So it's a fine line to walk, and if you're going in to talk to someone like this, again, as I said before, Putin is a master manipulator. He's been doing it his entire professional career. You have to be prepared to deal with him. And for Oliver Stone to come away from it and say, I think Putin respects me, just tells me he got thoroughly played by Putin. That's all there is to that.
Colbert also pressured Stone on his lack of follow-up questions after Putin, in the interview, dismissed the notion that the Russians interfered with the 2016 presidential election. From a journalistic standpoint, is that a pretty glaring error?
Of course it is. You know, it's not always possible to get an answer, no matter how many times you post the question. But you simply cannot let a blatant falsehood just hang out there in the air unchallenged if what you're doing is journalism. Again, Oliver Stone, in his film JFK, you know, peddled an awful lot of conspiracy theories. I don't know what he personally believes in all of this, but the point is I would not be counting on him to be challenging Putin because we were talking about confirmation bias a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
For all I know, Stone was going in with his own version, and Putin was simply affirming what he already believes. That's not journalism. I don't know what it is, but it's not journalism.
Megyn Kelly also interviewed the President Putin. Was her interview any better?
I think it had more journalistic elements to it, but I did again get the sense, and I mean I don't want to give him more credit than it deserves here, but again he and his media empire have been working at manipulation, disinformation, propaganda for a very long time, very smooth, very comfortable, and unless you are very well armed with counterfacts and are prepared to deal with them, you're not going to be able to do that. I was in Eastern Europe last year on a Fulbright. I saw a lot of the stuff that comes out of Russia. The blatant lies and disinformation are really stunning, and it's done in an extremely smooth and very a way that can easily delude someone. And so what journalists ought to be doing is doing everything they can to debunk that, and you can't get taken in by it. Then you're just a propaganda tool.
Let's go to the phones now at 800-642-1234. Todd in Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think if we want to be considered truly informed, I think we have to ask ourselves a couple of questions. And one of them is, do we believe that we are truly open-minded? And by that I mean, are we actually willing to listen to points of view that may differ from our own point of view and from the point of view of the people that we associate with? The other question is, are we willing to voice our opinions and share our opinions with other people? And I guess getting back to my first question, though, I wanted to also just say we have to question whether or not we believe that there are two sides to every story. And if we truly believe that, we need to listen to a conservative point of view, and we need to listen to a liberal point of view. And we'll get that on the media. I always tell people that would tell me that they would never listen to a Rush Limbaugh or a Sean Hannity. I'd say, well, if you listen, you'll find out that they are on a CBS network or an ABC network, and they'll tell you routinely throughout their programs, they'll say, here's something that you won't hear in the mainstream media. Well, every 30 minutes, you have a newscast from the mainstream media that's part of the Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh program. And you don't hear these stories come up for maybe 6 months after you've heard it on those programs.
Well, let's get Jane in here for a reaction. Jane.
Well, I think two things. I absolutely agree that it is useful to look at a variety of viewpoints. I mean, as an off-the-top-of-my-head example, the Wall Street Journal leans conservative. I make it a point to read the Wall Street Journal because I want to know that viewpoint. I want to know those interpretations of the facts, and I think that's a valuable thing to do. But when we talk about Sean Hannity, we talk about Rush Limbaugh, and I would add Alex Jones. Rush Limbaugh has famously said, I am not a journalist. I don't think what Sean Hannity does is journalism. I think it's commentary. And it seems to me that to be legitimate commentary, it has to be fact-based. And I think you have to ask yourself, when they make these comments about the mainstream media will never tell you this story, I mean, the implication there is they won't tell you this because it doesn't fit their agenda. They also may not be telling you this because they cannot confirm it, because there are not facts to support that particular storyline. And one of the things that came out in Megyn Kelly's interview of Alex Jones last night was that he was saying something that people like Matt Drudge I've heard say in the past. Well, people were saying this. I mean, President Trump says it too. People are saying this, and so I want to get it out there. A journalist does not see his or her role as perpetuating rumor that has not been verified. Now, certainly, we can all make mistakes. Errors can happen inadvertently. But I think the most unethical thing a journalist can do is to knowingly perpetrate something that is not true.
We're discussing media ethics this hour in light of some controversial interviews recently. Earlier this month, veteran TV journalist Megyn Kelly was criticized for her interview of Russian President Vladimir Putin. You can join in this discussion, 800-642-1234. News is next. Hollywood director Oliver Stone was a guest on Stephen Colbert's Late Show a week ago, and he had to answer some tough questions about his documentary on Vladimir Putin. Stone was accused of lobbing a lot of softball questions at the Russian president and took his words at face value without any challenge or pushback. We're discussing how these controversial figures should be handled by the media this hour. Jane Kirtley stays with us. She's a media ethics and law professor at the University at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. You can join in 800-642-1234. Should fringe figures, conspiracy theorists land interviews with mainstream media? What kind of questions do they need to be asking? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones with Daryl in Couderay. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question.
Go ahead.
Well, I believe in the First Amendment. I realize that it's an old-fashioned belief, but still an American belief. My question, if six-figured people are all most Americans choose to believe, what does that say about Americans in general and their understanding of the First Amendment?
So you're saying that if wealthy people, when you say six-figured, are you talking about wealthy people then?
Yes.
And how do they factor into the First Amendment?
Well, you know, there's people like Amy Goodman and Maria Gallardon that give what their journalism is for free. And ABC, NBC, CNN, Fox, none of those ever play these people. Just like they never play Alex Jones until he squeezes in someplace. I'm not saying I believe in what he's saying, totally. But, you know, what's a conspiracy theory? Two little old ladies planning to go steal a bra at Walmart?
Well, let's get Jane here to weigh in. Jane.
Well, I think, you know, we could all deplore the notion that the commercial news media pays, you know, some of their anchors and reporters six-figure salaries or more. And certainly one of the narratives have been that people that are part of the establishment elite will just be promoting a particular agenda. I get that. And people like Amy Goodman with Democracy Now! And so forth obviously have a different narrative, and she's certainly tangled with establishment figures many times. But she does journalism, and that's the point I want to keep going back to. It's what it is sometimes referred to as the journalism of verification, and it takes time and it takes energy. And it's certainly true that there are times when the so-called mainstream media are not covering stories, you know, whether it's about minority communities or, you know, the big issue since the election is are the mainstream media paying enough attention to the Trump voter, the rural voter, people that were left behind after the crash of the early 2000s, things like that. And I think those are all absolutely fair criticisms. But to me, it comes down to this question of, are you going to trust sources that engage in the verification of information, or simply those that either pass along unverified things or were still manufactured? You know, it's not perfect. The news media are not perfect. But I guess here's the thing I would point out, that among the establishment media, whether it's the New York Times, the Washington Post, the mainstream networks, when they make mistakes, they acknowledge it and they correct it. And I'm sure there are people out there saying, oh, no, they don't. But yes, they do. And they don't pretend to be perfect. And I think that ability to recognize when you make a mistake and to correct it is part of the professionalism of what mainstream journalism is and what oftentimes these peddlers of falsehoods will not do. Alex Jones, if you watched him last night, danced around the fact that he really has no proof of the allegations he's made about what happened at Newtown or the 9/11 attacks or anything else. He's pandering in rumor at best. That is not journalism. I'm not saying you shouldn't pay attention to him because he's obviously influencing a lot of people, but the point is you don't just blindly accept what he's saying.
Well, let's touch on this concept of fact-checking for a moment. These days, anyone with a computer can engage in their own fact-checking. So if you're a member of the media and you get something wrong, your readers or your viewers will let you know about it. What is the takeaway here, then, on fact-checking?
Well, there was a commentary in the New York Times over the weekend where the point was made, and I think this is a good one, that with the ease at which, you know, everybody can now use digital media to communicate and make things that look very sophisticated, it's sometimes very difficult to tell when you're reaching a reliable source and when you're not. And I'm not necessarily talking about the news media at this point. I'm talking about, you know, statements about scientific facts, for example, you know, whatever that might be, whether it's vaccinations, global warming. I mean, you pick your topic. It's now it's a very sophisticated medium that is now accessible to anyone. So we don't have the kind of gatekeeper function that traditionally the mainstream media played. And some people would say that's good because that means it's not being filtered before you reach it. But it also means that unless you're very discerning, you can easily be misled by people that are setting out to either put out false information or just mistaken information. So I'm all for trafficking in the marketplace of ideas. This is a great idea, and it's absolutely fundamental to what the First Amendment is all about. So I agree with that. But I think this is a time when it's easier to be fooled than ever before. So you have to keep your guard up.
Let's go to Gary now in Ripon. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, my question is the assumption here that if 80% of the population thinks something, it's therefore true. And if a person gets labeled as a fringe person, what he thinks is therefore false.
I don't think that's it, and if that's the impression I'm giving in talking about this, I apologize, because what I think I'm trying to say is that certainly you know, conventional wisdom can be wrong. We've seen changes over the years, you know, just in my lifetime, about perceptions about what's healthy to eat, what's not healthy to eat, what activities are dangerous, what are safe, all those kinds of things. So certainly the conventional wisdom and the received wisdom evolve over time. A minority viewpoint can sometimes emerge as being correct. So that's absolutely true. But what I keep going back to is just this simple point. It's about verification. It's about finding the facts that support the assertion and not just making the assertion because it's provocative or because you would like it to be true. So for me, that's the distinction. But it's not suggesting that those in holding a minority viewpoint will necessarily be mistaken. And that's one other thing I guess I need to say again. I absolutely agree with the notion of differing viewpoints and differing interpretation of facts. What concerns me is we don't seem to have kind of a core sense of facts at this point from which we are moving forward as we discuss and try to formulate policy.
Gary, thanks for your call. Let's go to Bart now in Madison. Hi, Bart.
Hello. Yes, am I on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. You know, I see the biggest problem with media right now is that they're all lying. They said that Hillary was going to win the election. We got Chuck Todd and everybody, ABC, NBC, CBS, the like, all saying that the Russians. We've got Comey and Clapper both saying there was no Russian collusion. There was no investigation on the president. You know, it's gotten so decisive that the people in this country are shooting people now at baseball practice for what party they are. They've turned this in the Democrats who enslaved the slaves. And it was Republicans who gave the women the right to vote, and they're making them out the bad guys.
So Bart has found a very hyper-partisan environment causing a very blurry sense of what is news.
I agree. And, I mean, his opening comment about everybody in the media lies is, to me, just the fundamental, you know, concern here. And I have to say, you know, whatever you think about Vladimir Putin, this only benefits him and the enemies of this country, whoever they are. If we have no belief that we can turn to an independent news media to get factual information, then we are in huge trouble. So I think his comment, even though I wouldn't agree with all of his characterizations, I would certainly agree with this, that if this is what we've come to, then our country is in a lot of trouble.
Jane, I think it's fair to say that the media is under a great deal of pressure right now. On one hand, the public expects coverage of everything that's happening right now, and on the other, trust in the media tends to be very low. With all that in mind, what is your prescription for the media going forward?
We have to be accurate. I mean, that is the biggest thing. I think the pressures of competition and the need for speed and the idea that people want to hear a story the second it happens operates counter to everything that is good about journalism, which is taking the time you need to put together the facts and to build a coherent account that is as factual as you can make it, as accurate as you can make it. And that, I think, is the biggest challenge, because, you know, just watching cable news commentary and so forth, people can easily conflate that with straight news reporting. It's a distinction that I think is getting lost to our peril, because, again, if we don't have a received set of facts, a source we can turn to for what we think is honest reporting, then I don't know how we go forward in this very contentious time.
And when we see a number of analysts who are on a panel discussion, all bringing their own viewpoints, oftentimes perhaps the facts of the story can get skewed or maybe not brought up perhaps in the order of relevance?
It's a lot of heat and very little light, I think, in those circumstances. And, you know, the devolution to just shouting fests on television, I think, have done more to undermine public discourse than anything else I can point to right now. It's whoever shouts the loudest wins, and it's all win or lose. It's all zero-sum game. And if I disagree with you, then that means you must be an evil person. These are dangerous trends, and I hope we can do something to turn the clock back on that.
Well, Jane, we really appreciate you joining us this morning.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Jane Kirtley is a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication. That's at the University of Minnesota. She also directs the Scylla Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law. This hour of the Joy Cardine Show was produced by Chris Molina and Brianne Chasso. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for the Joy Cardine Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about a topic that parents are likely all too familiar with, lice, and why the current methods of treatment may be losing their effectiveness. We'll find out why some scientists are warning about super lice and what, if anything, we can do about it. Hope you can join us tomorrow after 6 here on the Ideas Network.